Ethical Business Practices. Introduction. Ethical considerations in commercial real estate are profoundly different from those in residential. To begin with, there is no bona fide multiple listing service, MLS, for brokers to list their properties for sale. Many commercial listings are open listings, which allow more than one broker to list the property at a time, and the first one to sell it gets the commission. It does not matter who worked the most hours or did the most work to sell it. There is no recognition for that. Whoever sells it gets the commission, pure and simple. This is procurement. Once a for sale sign goes up, the game has begun. Because of this, the commercial world is very tight-knit. Brokers and agents keep their listings close to their vests, searching quietly for clients of their brokerage with the means to purchase high-dollar listings, only sharing information with a trusted inner circle. Quite often, agents will not place a for sale sign in front of a building, so very few people ever knew the property was for sale in the first place. Canons of professional ethics and conduct. All license holders are required to adhere to the provisions of the Texas Real Estate License Act and to the rules of the Texas Real Estate Commission. The Act and the rules describe a wide range of lawful and unlawful behavior. The fact that brokers do business in an ethical manner requires far more than a strict application of rules and laws. Remember, a business practice may not be ethical, even if it is legal. The Texas Real Estate Commission has included the Canons of Professional Ethics and Conduct, Chapter 531 of TREC Rules, for real estate license holders in the rules of the Commission. Canon 1, Fidelity. A real estate broker or salesperson, while acting as an agent for another, is a fiduciary. Special obligations are imposed when such fiduciary relationships are created. They demand that the primary duty of the real estate agent is to represent the interests of the agent's client, and the agent's position, in this respect, should be clear to all parties concerned in a real estate transaction, that, however, the agent, in performing duties to the client, shall treat other parties to a transaction fairly, that the real estate agent be faithful and observant to trust placed in the agent, and be scrupulous and meticulous in performing the agent's functions, that the real estate agent place no personal interest above that of the agent's client. Absent any specific definition in a set of rules or statute, the common definition of the word or term normally applies. Scrupulously is defined as acting in strict regard for what is considered right or proper. Punctiliously exact, painstaking. Meticulously is defined as marked by extreme or excessive care in the consideration or treatment of details. Careful. Therefore, one can conclude by these definitions that the license holder must perform his or her duties in a way that exhibits a knowledge of what is right and appropriate under the circumstances and with care about details. Canon 2. Integrity. A real estate broker or salesperson has a special obligation to exercise integrity in the discharge of the license holder's responsibilities, including employment of prudence and caution so as to avoid misrepresentation, in any way, by acts of commission or omission. Canon 3, Competency. It is the obligation of a license holder to be knowledgeable as a real estate brokerage practitioner. The license holder must 1. Be informed on local market issues and conditions affecting real estate in the geographic area where a license holder provides services to a client. 2. Be informed on national, state, and local issues and developments in the real estate industry. 3. Exercise judgment and skill in the performance of brokerage activities. And 4. Be educated in the characteristics involved in the specific type of real estate being brokered by others. In determining whether they are maintaining competence, license holders might ask the following: What are my strengths and deficiencies? Do I attend classes to improve my services to my clients or customers? How often? What resources are available to help me maintain my competency? Do I keep abreast of market conditions in the area in which I practice? How? Am I aware of trends in real estate practices? How do I usually find out about these trends? Do I read real estate commission and trade publications? Which ones? How do they help me maintain my competence? Can I identify local, state, and national issues that are currently under development or consideration? Canon 4, Consumer Information. A. The Commission adopts, by reference, the Consumer Protection Notice TREC, Form Number CN-1-3. This document is published by and available from the Texas Real Estate Commission. B. Each active real estate broker and sales agent shall provide the notice adopted under subsection A by 1, displaying it in a readily noticeable location in each place of business the broker maintains, and 2, providing a link to it in a readily noticeable place on the homepage of each business website, labeled A, Texas Real Estate Commission Consumer Protection Notice, in at least 10-point font, or B, TREC Consumer Protection Notice, in at least 12-point font. C. For purposes of this section, business website means a website on the internet that 1. Is accessible to the public, 2. Contains information about a license holder's real estate brokerage services, and 3. The content of the website is controlled by the license holder. D. For purposes of providing the link required under subsection B2 on a social media platform, the link may be located on 1. The account holder profile, or 2. A separate page or website through a direct link from the social media platform or account holder profile. Canon 5. Discriminatory practices. A. No real estate license holder shall inquire about, respond to, or facilitate inquiries about, or make a disclosure of an owner, previous or current occupant, potential purchaser, lessor, or potential lessee of real property, which indicates or is intended to indicate any preference, limitation, or discrimination based on the following: race, color, religion, sex, national origin, ancestry, familial status, or disability. B. For the purpose of this section, disability includes AIDS, HIV-related illnesses, or HIV infection as defined by the Centers for Disease Control of the United States Public Health Service. Minimum levels of service are spelled out by TREC and required of real estate brokers and their agents. Whether you are a discount broker or a co-broker with a discount broker, you need to understand these four levels of minimum service. 1. Put the interest of the client above all others, including the broker's own interests. 2. Inform the client of material information about the property or the transaction received by the broker. 3. Answer the client's questions and present any offer to or counteroffer from the client. 4. Treat all parties to a real estate transaction honestly and fairly. Of note, brokers who sponsor a sales agent, or the broker of an entity, or those authorized to supervise other license holders must be available to offer advice for the agents under the brokerage. The broker should not be an undercover broker. TREC complaints. A person may file a complaint with TREC against a real estate license holder if the person believes the license holder violated the Texas Real Estate License Act, TREA-LA. If TREC has jurisdiction over the complaint, it will typically investigate the allegations by interviewing the parties and witnesses and gathering relevant information. After review, TREC's Enforcement Division will notify the license holder if it intends to initiate disciplinary proceedings. After a hearing or other settlement procedure, it will render a decision. If the evidence establishes a violation, TREC may impose a reprimand, suspension of the license, revocation of the license, a fine, probation, or any combination. Complaint priorities. TREC is required to maintain a system to act promptly and efficiently on complaints and must maintain a file on each complaint. TREC gives priority to the investigation of complaints filed by a consumer and an enforcement case resulting from the consumer complaint. TREA-LA requires that TREC assign priorities and investigate complaints using a risk-based approach based on the degree of potential harm to the consumer, potential for immediate harm to the consumer, overall severity of the allegations and the complaint, number of license holders potentially involved in the complaint, previous complaint history of the license holder, and number of potential violations in the complaint. Refund to customer. TREC may order a license holder to pay a refund to a consumer as provided by an agreement resulting from an informal settlement conference or an enforcement order, in addition to imposing an administrative penalty, suspension, revocation, or other sanction. TREC advisory letters. When appropriate, TREC may close a complaint file by issuing an advisory letter to a license holder. An advisory letter is generally appropriate in more technical matters, when the provision that was violated is new, or when evidentiary or procedural problems exist, such as the unavailability of witnesses. An advisory letter is not a formal disciplinary action. Instead, the advisory letter is a notification that there were items revealed in the investigation that do not warrant disciplinary action, but, if not corrected, could lead to further complaints and, ultimately, disciplinary action. Informal proceedings. TREC is also required to adopt procedures governing the informal disposition of contested cases. An informal disposition must provide the complainant and the license holder the opportunity to be heard. The proceeding requires the presence of a public member of TREC for a case involving a consumer complaint, and at least two TREC staff members with experience in the regulatory area that is the subject of the proceeding. Temporary suspension. TREC's presiding officer for a case involving a consumer is required to appoint a disciplinary panel consisting of three commission members to determine whether a person's license to practice should be suspended temporarily. If the disciplinary panel determines that the license holder constitutes a threat to the public by continuing to practice, or the license holder constitutes a continuing threat to the public welfare, the panel will temporarily suspend that person's license. Need for agency policy. Scope of authorization. Section 535.2 of the TREC rules requires brokers to maintain written policies and procedures addressing a variety of matters, including the relationship between the broker and agents sponsored by or associated with the broker, competency of agents, compensation issues, maintenance of trust accounts, and maintenance of business records in general. A broker is required to advise a sponsored sales agent of the scope of the sales agent's authorized activities under the Texas Real Estate License Act. Unless such scope is limited or revoked in writing, a broker is responsible for the authorized acts of the broker's sales agent, but the broker is not required to supervise the sales agent directly. If a broker permits a sponsored sales agent to conduct activities beyond the scope explicitly authorized by the broker, those too will be deemed to be authorized acts for which the broker is responsible. It may be prudent to define the authorized acts in the independent contractor agreement and review them periodically with each license holder. Any delegation by the sponsoring broker to nominate another license holder to assist in administering compliance with the Act and TREC rules must be in writing. Under TREC Rules Section 535.2E, this delegation does not relieve the sponsoring broker from overall responsibility for the supervision of sponsored license holders. Intermediary brokerage. All commercial brokers practice intermediary because it is in their best interests to do so. As the intermediary, the broker can sell one of his listings to a buyer, illustrating the reason many commercial properties are not publicly listed as for sale. It is more beneficial to keep the commission in-house, so others are not vying for a part of the commission. Intermediary is a process that makes it possible to bring client buyers and sellers together while at the same time representing their best interests. When this type of transaction occurs, the broker becomes the intermediary. Since the broker has a personal duty to represent both sides, it is only appropriate that the broker remains neutral and avoid negotiating for either party. The broker cannot do anything that would give an advantage to one client at the expense of the other. In order to practice intermediary, the broker must have the written consent of both parties. The written consent must state the source of any anticipated compensation. We most often obtain written consent from sellers when they sign a listing agreement, and from buyers when they sign a buyer-tenant representation agreement. In that written consent, the seller is giving the broker permission to show his or her property to buyers whom the broker also represents. Likewise, the buyer is giving the broker written consent to show him or her properties listed with the firm. Residential transactions represent the most clear-cut examples of intermediary practice. Special issues arise in various non-residential transactions, including farm and ranch, commercial sales, commercial leasing, syndicates, development projects. One of the persistent issues in non-residential transactions is the tendency to use oral agreements on both sides of the transaction. Buyers are often reluctant to enter into a written buyer-tenant representation agreement. That business culture causes several problems: lack of client loyalty, lack of written authorization to practice intermediary, a sometimes casual attitude toward disclosure requirements and written agreements in general. Agents must be careful to determine who has representation in a transaction. In many cases, both sides of the transaction have legal representation. Whenever the parties do not have attorneys, or any time a party is asking questions that suggest that the license holder is providing representative services, the agent should obtain a written agreement. If appropriate, the agent should obtain intermediary consent. Use of intermediary in commercial real estate. Many residential brokers are hesitant to work intermediary deals, so much so that some brokers practice either buyer agency only or seller agency only to protect themselves from liability and the risk of lawsuits brought by a party to a transaction who felt unfairly treated by the broker during the transaction. Commercial agents, on the other hand, prefer to work intermediary deals. There is often a conflict of interest when a broker represents both sides of a transaction. Intermediary is the process in Texas that makes it possible to bring client buyers and sellers together, while at the same time representing their best interests. When this type of transaction occurs, the broker becomes the intermediary. Since the broker has a personal duty to represent both sides, it is only appropriate that the broker remain neutral and avoid negotiating for either party. So, why do commercial brokers and agents prefer to work intermediary deals? Commercial brokerages prefer to do intermediary deals because they want to sell to one of their clients. Unlike most residential transactions, commercial transactions can soar into the millions. Commercial companies would prefer to keep the large commissions in-house. In fact, many times a commercial property sells quietly because there was no public listing and no signage on the property. Unlike residential agents who want to broadcast their listings on social media and beyond, commercial agents keep their listings quiet and in-house, shopping them to their firm's pool of client buyers. Of course, high-end listings are different from leasing agreements, which will be advertised to bring in tenants for the property owner. Deceptive trade practices and consumer protection. The Deceptive Trade Practices Act, or DTPA, is a Texas law that was passed in 1973. It allows an aggrieved consumer to sue a seller of goods for damages. The act by the seller of the goods has to be deceptive or unfair for the consumer to successfully sue for monetary damages. To better understand how license holders became a party to the DTPA, the following definitions may help. Goods. Goods are defined as tangible chattels. Real property is tangible when purchased or leased. Under DTPA, the sale of a house is considered a good. Services. Services mean work, labor, or repair of goods. Brokerage is a service. Consumer. Consumer is an individual, corporation, partnership, or government source who seeks to acquire or purchase the goods or services. Any consumer can bring an action against a provider of services when the consumer can prove that the servicer was the producing cause of any of the following: use or employment by any person of a false, misleading, or deceptive act or practice that is specifically identified in the act, breach of an express or implied warranty, any unconscionable action or course of action by any person, the use or employment by any person of an act or practice in violation of the Texas Insurance Code. Producing cause requires proof that the act or omission was a significant factor in bringing about the injury. The DTPA is an extremely important law in Texas, and when a real estate license holder is sued, it tends to be due to an action under the DTPA. In the practice of commercial real estate, however, DTPA rarely applies as most commercial transactions are over $500,000. Business and Commerce Code, Title II, Competition and Trade Practices. Chapter 17, Deceptive Trade Practices. Subchapter E, Deceptive Trade Practices and Consumer Protection. Section 17.49. Item G, nothing in this subchapter shall apply to a cause of action arising from a transaction, a project, or a set of transactions relating to the same project, involving total consideration by the consumer of more than $500,000, other than a cause of action involving a consumer's residence. Caveat emptor. Caveat emptor is a Latin phrase most people have heard at some point. Let the buyer beware. All real estate transactions in Texas are done as is. And though there are remedies for purchasers of residential properties, the law in Texas considers commercial real estate transactions to occur between sophisticated and informed parties working with legal counsel. So it falls upon the buyer and the buyer's counsel to be knowledgeable and informed. The sales agent and the buyer must practice due diligence. A commercial agent assisting a client in buying apartment buildings should practice due diligence by inspecting all of the apartment units in the building, including using voltage meters to ensure that electrical outlets are live, checking refrigerators and freezers in every unit to ensure that they are functioning, checking the air conditioning in each unit to make sure it is cooling, turning the lights on and off in each room, checking carpets and floor coverings in each unit for wear and tear. Master the art of asking the right questions of the seller. Do not ask if every unit has a refrigerator. The seller will say that every unit has a refrigerator. However, the fridges may not all be in working condition. Ask instead if every unit has a working refrigerator. Do not forget to ask the seller the age of the appliances and air conditioning units. If the appliances and AC units are older than 10 years, then they will need to be replaced sooner rather than later, leaving your buyer with expensive replacement costs on the horizon. Make a list of deferred maintenance for the sellers. This list of items could prove useful in negotiating a lower price for the buyer. As always, have legal counsel review all agreements and terms. Use of attorneys and CPAs in commercial transactions. Most commercial buyers and sellers will be represented by an attorney who will guide the buyer, review contracts and leases, and provide them with the legal advice throughout the transaction to help them make sound business decisions. Commercial firms will also employ an attorney to advise agents and to draft the firm's contracts. Tax lawyers and CPAs also commonly play roles in commercial transactions. Buyers and sellers both need to understand specific tax implications of the transaction. Commercial brokers and agents are not to provide legal advice or to draft contracts unless they are real estate attorneys. They must use either their firm's contracts or contracts created by their real estate association, like the Texas Realtors. Brokers and agents must also refrain from giving financial advice to their clients. Even if you understand the financial ramifications of purchasing a particular piece of property, you must inform your client to discuss these issues with either their legal team or their accountants. Fair housing. Fair housing laws exist at the federal, state, and local levels to ensure that all citizens have unobstructed access to housing. Residential agents must always adhere to all fair housing laws and cannot discriminate or refuse to sell or rent property based upon a buyer's race, color, national origin, religion, sex, familial status, or disability. Steering and blockbusting are major violations punishable by monetary penalties, disciplinary proceedings from voluntary trade associations, and possible revocation of license from state licensing authorities. The reality in commercial real estate is much different. It is important to understand that fair housing does not apply to commercial real estate sales. As a commercial sales agent, you are not selling a house to a resident. You are selling a property to a company or investor. These clients want to know the demographic makeup of the area in which they are investing their money. Retailers rely on demographics to reach a specific target market, and they need to determine whether or not opening a store at a particular location will be a successful venture. In addition to the racial demographics of an area, retailers will want to know the education levels, household income, average age, and the number of children per household. Residential agents cannot share demographic information like this with their clients. The mindset is much different, and as such, commercial clients and agents adhere to different standards. Professional organizations. The National Association of Realtors is by far the largest professional organization for real estate professionals, both commercial and residential. The nationwide association is divided into state associations, then further divided into local associations or boards. The local associations or boards operate the Multiple Listing Service, MLS, in markets throughout the United States. However, less than half of commercial real estate agents are members of the NAR. Joining a professional organization and obtaining designations are by far the best ways to gain knowledge and expertise in the business. Obtaining the CCIM designation, for example, is an expensive and time-intensive endeavor, requiring roughly $20,000 and a fair amount of travel across the country to attend classes. However, it could be worth the expense as it is considered the gold standard of designations for commercial agents or brokers, proving their level of commitment to their careers. Commercial real estate professional associations include CCIM Institute. The CCIM Institute was established in 1954 to allow commercial real estate practitioners to further their business practices through education and networking opportunities. The Institute administers the Certified Commercial Investment Member, CCIM, designation. The CCIM Institute is the largest commercial real estate professional organization. The CCIM Institute expects its members to believe in and promote ethical leadership, cultural awareness, investment in the future, staying connected, fiscal responsibility, and acting globally. In order to earn the CCIM designation, candidates must complete educational requirements and pass a comprehensive exam. Applicants must also submit a portfolio of qualifying experience for review. Candidates must complete a course in ethics, which provides relevant information about the CCIM code of and standards of practice of CCIM Institute, as well as negotiation training and elective courses. Institute of Real Estate Management, IREM. Many commercial real estate agents, property managers, residential managers, and commercial managers forgo membership to the NAR to join one of the commercial real estate organizations. Members of IREM pledge to uphold the IREM Code of Professional Ethics and to maintain high moral and ethical standards. The Institute of Real Estate Management, IREM, is an international community of real estate managers dedicated to ethical business practices, maximizing the value of investment real estate, and promoting superior management through education and information sharing. IREM membership includes more than nearly 20,000 individuals and 550 corporate members. Society of Industrial and Office Realtors, SIOR. SIOR is a professional organization that began in 1939, now with over 3,000 members worldwide. SIOR offers the SIOR designation, a symbol of knowledge, production, and ethics in the real estate industry. Affiliated with the NAR, SIOR offers specialty designations in industrial, office, sales manager, executive manager, or advisory service. The SIOR Code of Ethical Principles and Standards of Professional Practice consists of 16 principles and their associated standards of professional practice, including honoring fiduciary duties, anti-discrimination, disclosure of agency relationship, and obedience of the law. International Council of Shopping Centers. The purpose of the International Council of Shopping Centers, ICSC, is to advance the shopping center industry and to promote its role in the commercial distribution of consumer goods and services. Building Owners and Managers Association, BOMA, International. BOMA is a federation of 93 BOMA U.S. associations, BOMA Canada, and 13 BOMA International affiliates. BOMA International's members are building owners, managers, developers, leasing professionals, corporate facility managers, asset managers, and the providers of the products and services needed to operate commercial properties.